Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Anyone got some WD-40? That was a rusty start to Manchester United's Premier League season, and a lucky one too. A hardly deserved 1-0 home victory over Wolves. Job done? Well, yes, but many more questions than answers from that performance. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Harry Robinson, and Jack Tate is alongside me as always. And today we'll review a lot of things. Ten Hag's season opening tactics, the open, wide open midfield, the underwhelming wingers, an impactful Sancho substitution, Andre Onana's controversial competitive debut, and loads more. We'll play Guess the Player, we'll give you your regular extensive academy roundup, we'll preview Saturday's match at Tottenham Hotspur, and our patrons will get an extra 10 or 15 minute chat dissecting the game in further detail. Lots to get through, so let's get stuck in. Jack, beginning with our general overall conclusions from what is an opening day victory, so we should be happy about, but it was definitely rusty, it was definitely open, it was a bit Solskjaer-esque, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, especially the second half felt very Solskjaer-esque. It really felt like it was kind of just time to hope for the best and hope that the quality in the players that we have would drag us through without too much in the way of kind of any sort of patterns of play from United. Didn't seem to have a great idea of how we were trying to break Wolves down. I think there's quite a bit to take away from that game that was maybe you could say concerning, probably more things that we just want to see changed. And you hope that this was just a case of, you know, first game of the season, rust, playing on a Monday night in the first week of the season somehow always feels tough. Like there's a potential for a bit of an upset and, you know, maybe a difficult performance. Definitely a rusty, like you said, kind of throwback performance to a few years ago.
Yeah, I thought the first half was okay, just a bit rusty, and you thought, oh, start the season, as long as we get going in the second here. We had a nice kind of regular ball out to Antony, and we're beginning to carve out some kind of half chances. And then the second half, Wolves had really figured out what we were doing, which wasn't a huge amount, and stepped things up a bit, and we seemed to drop off even further. We often talk about Ten Hag's tactics in good victories, but it's probably more important to talk about the tactics and the opponent's tactics in defeat or in games like this where we didn't quite deserve to win. So did you feel that Wolves did anything out of the ordinary to make us look poor, or were these familiar issues for United?
I thought Wolves set up well, but I don't think it was anything extraordinary. It was a pretty simple, basically man-to-man press. They had sort of set up with their front two in Mateus Cunha and Pablo Sarabia, pretty much tracking Varane and Martinez. Shaw would usually come inside, as we kind of predicted would happen, as Mount's position was much higher up the pitch than Eriksen's was last year. So you effectively kind of ended up with Wolves' front five pretty much matched up man-to-man to our back five, the back four plus Casemiro. And I think the issue for United, you mentioned that the outball very often was to Antony and Garnacho, and that was definitely the main source of kind of attacking promise that we had down the sides. I think the issue for United was that we weren't ever really able to get anything going through the middle of the pitch. Almost every time either Casemiro, Mount or Shaw received the ball in midfield, they had usually Nunez Gomez, but really any of those three Wolves midfielders immediately on them. They were unable to turn, and we weren't able to play through the middle of Wolves, get those balls into Bruno Fernandes or Mason Mount on the half turn and then get them playing forward from there. It just meant that even when we were able to get the ball to Garnacho or Antony, we weren't ever able really to take any of Wolves' defence out of the game. So even when we did manage to get the ball into decent wide areas, there was still, you know, seven or eight Wolves players back there.
Right.
I have a couple of ways I think United should have gone about it differently, which I can come on to in a second. But I mean, from in the stadium, did you get the sense that that was an issue for United, being not being able to play through midfield?
It's always hard when you're in the ground, especially first match of the season. You've had a few pints before. I've watched back most of the game, but to really understand it from a slightly different angle, it just felt just so flat and not enough movement. And it felt like all the individuals just looked rusty. And when there was that excitement at the start of the game when Antony or Garnacho got it, and it just kept not coming off, especially with Garnacho, which everyone was so excited after that performance against Alonso Old Trafford a week and a bit ago, like 9 or 10 days before this game, where he looked so sharp and it looked like this player who's on the cusp of stardom was about to kind of explode at the start of his second full season. And it wasn't there. He didn't have... He kept trying those one-on-one opportunities and it just wasn't coming off. And I think that's in the first half, we did create some of those opportunities. So that's what I mean about how it felt like in the second, if that was not a terrible foundation for the second half, being 0-0, Wolves hadn't caused us too many. They'd got through a couple of times, but it was really in the second half where they started just racing through our midfield and time again. And that's when he thought, we've been lucky here.
Yeah, the game became very stretched, very disjointed. And from United's point of view, we weren't able to really ever stem the flow of Wolves' attacks, especially, like you said, those runs from deep in midfield. It seemed like every time we lost the ball, there was a big focus on trying to surround whichever Wolves player had won it back. You know, the idea being either you win it back immediately or give away those very cynical fouls, and United weren't doing either. And so then it ended up with Casemiro trying to marshal sort of 50 yards of space. I felt in the first half and in the second, but by the time the second half came around, like I said, the game was just a bit of a mess in terms of the structure of it.
Yeah.
I think there were two things that United should have done better to get around what Wolves were trying to do to stop us playing forward. The first was that we could have done some more longer balls over that initial front five of Wolves to then isolate the back five. Because, you know, Wolves' structure, their shape with their front five was good. But like I said, they were going man to man. So if we were able to bypass that, you know, those first two lines of defence, we're also man to man with their back five. And so then you've got Garnacho, Rashford, Antony, Bruno Fernandes and Mason Mount, who have the run of things now up against the Wolves' defence. So that really is what I was looking for more. And it happened once, right around 20 minutes. Onana had the ball on the edge of the box. There was no good option. Shaw made a good run to drop deep that dragged one of the Wolves' midfielders with him. And then Onana played a brilliant ping pass straight out to Garnacho, and he was immediately one-on-one against Semedo. That, for me, didn't happen often enough, and I hope that's something we'll see more, because we know that Onana has more than the ability needed to play those kind of passes really accurately. The other one is, I was looking for just some better movement from United. There was very, very little in the way of anyone trying anything to try and drag Wolves' front five out into a position they didn't want to be in. We never really saw a midfielder dropping in as a third centre-back. We never saw one of the wingers dropping really
deep.
That's true,
actually, because that was one of the key things that we noticed in pre-season. And actually, there's been this big emphasis at the moment and discussion about how Ten Hag's making the academy teams play in the same way. And having watched those, the under-18s and the under-21s this weekend, that's also is really notable, that third centre-back dropping in. A midfielder dropping into defence, and sometimes you're seeing the centre-back go forward. So for the 21s against Palace, and I'll tell you about that game later, but like Ted and Mengi was going into midfield from centre-back, and I think it was Toby Collier was dropping back into centre-back. And so it feels like that's kind of one of Ten Hag's things for the whole club. And we definitely saw it in the first team in pre-season, but that was, you're right. That felt like it was completely missing.
I mean, if you go back and watch the game, you'll see there's probably... in the first half, 6 or 7 occasions where Onana has the ball at his feet for 5 or even 10 seconds, and every United player in shot is walking, basically. You know, that's, I think, where the rust comes in. It just seemed like, for whatever reason, kind of the intelligent movement that, like you said, we did see in pre-season, especially the most recent, second most recent game against Lyon, but, you know, the most recent game where full team of starters played. We did see that a lot, especially between Shaw, Martinez, Casemiro, Varane. We commented on it in our last episode. So it was just strange not to see that carry through into the first game of the season. You just got to hope it was just kind of an anomaly for this game with a bit of rust.
Yeah. There's quite a few questions. Well, the midfield is, I think, kind of the key debate here. And we've got a couple of patron questions on that subject. And Matt Peck says, how worrying is the composition of our midfield based on that Wolves and the preseason games? It seems like they can be run through with these. is this another start to the season where Ten Hag is experimenting with midfield? And do you think it might change quite quickly based on these first couple of performances? Or do you think he's willing to kind of see it through this time until we get it right? Because at the moment, the key thing, Casemiro just looks so exposed.
Yeah. And we know that Casemiro's biggest weakness in defence is that he isn't the most mobile. He never has been. That's why he dives into so many challenges, because players are able to run past him. And so he has to dive in, try and make a tackle earlier than other midfielders would have to. And that's fine. You know, that's just part of his game. I think Ten Hag will stick with this midfield. He's obviously bought Mason Mount in for a reason, and he thinks that he can set this midfield up in a way that is going to be able to, you know, still handle that defensive workload. I think the idea is that if United are still able to play out from the back through midfield with this trio in there, we will then have an extra person in Mount much higher up the pitch. If you look at United's pass map from this game, Mount is basically as advanced as Bruno Fernandes. So the idea is that you then have an extra player high up in the middle of the pitch, able to, you know, exploit the attack.
Yeah.
I think if Ten Hag sees that bringing Shaw inside into midfield, which was sort of the way that we created that double pivot next to Casemiro, that was obviously the role that Eriksen was mainly playing last year. I think if Ten Hag sees that that isn't working and we're just not able to work the ball through midfield at all, then he might be tempted to change. But I think we would stick with this for a few games yet.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, like, the average positions map is very funny. Casemiro is so exposed when the kind of the average positions of each player worked out. And United had that. It sure did tuck in, but it was kind of Shaw and Fernandes in front as a kind of inside forward pair ahead of Casemiro. And then a front five of Garnacho and Wan-Bissaka, kind of the two wide players, Mount and Antony with Rashford through the middle. And yeah, it looked like a team who wouldn't be able to play like that. I think it's worth pointing out that there were a lot of very average individual performances. And so we can talk about the system and there's kind of, there, I think rightly, and we are talking about is this the right system? Is Ten Hag going to stick with it? But ultimately, even like Lisandro Martinez was a bit off it, and Casemiro was a bit off it, and Antony and Garnacho didn't quite have that spark to them throughout the whole game. And if just one or two of those changes, Rashford too, and Bruno Fernandes actually had a bad game as well. If just one or two of those players had a better game, we'd then be talking probably about those who didn't have such a good game instead of the system. Do you think, so which one do you think it is?
Well, I mean, it's always a bit of both as whenever there's any question like this. But I think the thing for me is, I think if one or two of those players that you mentioned, like no one in United's starting front five had a good game, I don't think. And I think if any one or two of those players played anywhere close to their best, we're probably sitting here saying, wasn't the best performance, but a lot of positives to take. You know, Antony and Rashford were brilliant. Yeah. I hope they can carry that.
Kind of bedding into the system now.
Yeah, exactly. And because those players at their best are good enough that the whole team doesn't have to play their best for us to win. You know, Rashford is capable of winning a game almost single-handedly. We've seen Antony at his best is a very, very good link player, able to, you know, play with brilliant incisive passes that kind of once it cuts inside into the channel. You know, if any of those players have a good game, we're probably talking about this very differently. Yeah. So I think for this game, it probably was more about players having poor performances. Because Garnacho in particular, not that he was the worst one, but he in particular got into some good positions against Semedo. Three or four times in the first half an hour, he had, you know, one-on-ones against Semedo, which is normally a position where you'd expect Garnacho to be beating his man and getting either crosses in or shooting almost every time. So in that sense, I think you could say the system wasn't brilliant. It clearly had some downfalls, but we did create situations that you would expect us to take advantage of, and then the players didn't. And it was the same with Antony on the other side as well.
Yeah, and it also feels like the first half is where we can really take some conclusions from, and the second half it kind of...
Second half was the game.
The game kind of fell apart anyway. So it's less useful to take conclusions from that. We're going to carry on talking about the game, but guess the player.
It would have been interesting, just to add one more last thing. It would have been interesting to see how the game panned out if United hadn't have scored when we did. Because the 5 minutes leading up to the goal, we had finally started to get a little bit of control in the game. We were putting on a little bit of side pressure. And that obviously led to
the goal. That's one of the positives, isn't it?
Yeah, it just would have been interesting to see how much we were able to keep up that kind of pressure on Wolves if we had.
That's a positive, is it? When we actually switched on and played with a bit of intensity, we scored, and it wasn't a long period. So that's the positive. And we did win. Anyway, we're going to carry on talking. We'll talk about Onana and a couple of other things. But guess a player, clue one, me setting for you this week as a reminder, three clues for a United player or staff member, past or present. The quicker you get it, the more points you get. And Jack, your first clue this week is very simply, I have a biblical name. I have a biblical name. So I'll let that fester in your mind while we
My talk. First two thoughts are players that have never even played for United. I'm just going Gabriel Jesus and Victor Moses.
interesting. I'll let that fester. You can always guess before clue two if you suddenly have a brainwave. Andre Onana performance overall. Let's get the penalty incident out of the way. And this is why we've been saying United was so fortunate. I will play devil's advocate in a second, but the referees have apologised for it. The officials have been stood down for the weekend. So I think most people agree it's a mistake and Wolves should have had a penalty. But Onana had a very good performance and he may well have saved it because he was playing very well. I liked what he said afterwards. He said, I made the decision and I'm responsible for everything. There was contact between two big guys. There's something about his attitude that I really like. He just seems like someone who takes responsibility and is very comfortable in the type of player he is, the type of goalkeeper he is, and everything. I loved watching him. I loved his footwork, but I also enjoyed how ready he was to throw it out so quickly. I feel like it's taken United about 4 years to gradually get to this, and the new keeper is the biggest step. But even under De Gea, we were slowly starting to speed up at that. But it still needs a lot more. As you said earlier, there was too many times where Onana had the ball for 5 or 10 seconds and there wasn't enough movement. But there were other times where he had the ball for 2 seconds, but he was ready to throw it half a second after he had it, and United's outfield players weren't responding quick enough. But I thought a very good performance to start with. Was it a penalty? You're the referee expert.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a penalty. I couldn't believe it wasn't given. I can understand why it wasn't given on field.
Right.
Because it's one of those ones where it is sort of hard to see. And, you know, so often goalkeepers are given, they're sort of allowed to do whatever they want. But
yeah,
given that it was checked for so long on VAR, I couldn't believe it was then decided it wasn't a penalty.
I thought it was going to be given.
I do agree with everything. Yeah. And when Simon Hooper came, I was confused when Simon Hooper was coming over to the side.
Yeah.
Because he didn't make the sort of VAR, you know, like monitor symbol with his hand.
Yeah. By the time he went over, it was very confusing because they'd already announced, they said VAR confirmed no penalty. They'd announced in the stadium. And then he went over and everyone was thinking, have we messed up the announcement here? And then, showed a booking. So that was a relief. My question is, and it's kind of devil's advocate, but it's also, I'm interested. How many times do you see a goalkeeper take a play out with a sliding challenge after the shot has been taken? And that isn't a penalty. And I don't think anyone would suggest it is. When the player's got the shot away and the goalkeeper kind of takes his leg away after that, that's not a penalty or a foul. At least I don't remember that being given as a penalty or foul very often. So why is it different when he's headed the ball already and Onana's come in and basically cleared him out afterwards?
Yeah, it's a fair point. It happened in the Spurs-Brentford game, actually. Spurs' new goalkeeper, Vicario, took out, I think it was Mbeumo or Vissa. I think it was Mbeumo. When Mbeumo kind of shot and it went out and Vicario had come out and ended up clattering into him after the shot had been taken. It's just a weird... It's a weird quirk in the rule that players seem to be able to make as much contact as they want after a player takes a shot, especially if that shot goes out of play. Whereas if a player passes and then gets taken out,
yeah,
it's always a foul, you know. And it's sort of this weird unwritten rule. And I think that is more
kind
of what you're talking about. Whereas this, I think, because the ball stayed in play and because it wasn't a shot, it looked more like just a really late challenge from Onana.
Interesting.
And I mean, you could see it coming as the ball was coming in. I understand why Onana came out for it, but you could kind of see that he was never getting there. It was an odd decision. I couldn't believe it wasn't given on VAR. We obviously will take the luck and run, but I do agree with you. I thought Onana was outstanding all night. I thought him and Wan-Bissaka were the two standout players for United. But, you know, Onana, we didn't honestly see quite as much transformative, like, build-up play with his feet as I think maybe I expected, at least. You know, he kept things relatively simple. There was that one beautiful pass to Garnacho that I already mentioned. In general, kept things very simple. But, you know, when he was actually called upon to be a more traditional goalkeeper as well, he stood up to that test brilliantly. A few good saves. He seems really in command at the back. And I think De Gea at times, just because he was a little bit of a sort of nervous presence, he didn't always command that backline in the way that you would kind of hope.
Yeah, and look, this conversation might be very different if that had been given a penalty and United have drawn this game because of an Onana mistake. But you just, my seat was very close to where the goal he was keeping in the second half. So that incident and all of that. And just, I feel like, especially with a goalkeeper, but you always get a feeling with a new signing at United in their first game at Old Trafford, does it feel right? Do they feel like they've got a command on the game rather than the stage is too big for them? And especially with keepers. I mean, if you go back to the start of De Gea's United career, it was a struggle. And obviously between Schmeichel and Van der Sar, there were many, many struggles. It just felt right. And he looked like he belonged, which is no surprise. Like, he's had outstanding Champions League performances, including in a final, and has been a great goalkeeper in Europe for several years. But it's still a step up, and yeah, it just felt right, which is a very good sign. Who else was? Sancho was very good when he came on, which is worth pointing out, isn't it?
Yeah, very good. He was really the only attacking player that was able to carry the ball forward. He dropped deeper than all of our other forwards that were playing and received the ball much more regularly in those kind of areas around the halfway line on the half turn. I mean, it's probably partly because, as we said, the game was sort of breaking down tactically, so Wolves' structure was also getting worse. But I think in general, he made a big impact. There was still, you'd want a little bit more in terms of, quite often he'd make, you know, some very good movements or a good carry with the ball, and then it would either be the final pass or getting past the final defender where things would kind of break down. But he definitely offered us a lot more security and dynamism going forward than I think Antony or Garnacho had done.
And Pulisic got a chance off the bench. We're going to talk a bit more about wingers in the Patreon Q&A in just a second, but he came on quite earlier than he ever did last season. And yeah, he had the same. He's got something about him, as we said last week. Is it, as I say, there'll be a bit more conversation on this game in the Patreon Q&A, but to wrap up here, is it just a Wolves thing? We've come away from a game that we always struggle in and got 3 points. We should probably just take it, shouldn't we? Because I think we can talk a lot about how United would have lost this game against a better team. Say we'd played Brighton as we did last season. But first of all, you play who you're up against. But I think more importantly, Wolves might not be a hard team for everyone to play against, but they are for United. They just are. We struggle against them all the time, and they might have changed managers and the personnel in their midfield, but it's a similar style of quite press-resistant midfielders who can just run through United's midfield in the way that we traditionally set up. So is it just a Wolves thing? Should we just be happy with this and take a winning start to the season?
Yeah, I mean, really, this game wasn't that much different to the game of Molyneux in January when Rashford was dropped because he was late and then came on and scored in very similar sort of time in the game, around 80 minutes. We do always struggle against Wolves. It's been that way for 4 or 5 years. I don't know why. I can't really explain to you, you know, what it is about playing Wolves that makes us seem to struggle. There is an argument to be made, I think, that this game was ripe with conditions that could have made a team like United slip up, in that, like we said, it was the Monday night game on the first week, which always seems to have an air of potential upset about it. It was playing against a team that we traditionally don't play well against in Wolves, you know, just in general, first game of the season. And we said in our last episode that Wolves would come into this game obviously as massive underdogs, given all the upheaval that they've gone through in the last couple of weeks. But there was a chance that they came out with this very sort of backs against the wall, defiant kind of performance. And I think that's sort of what we saw. You know, it's hard this early in the season to figure out how much of this is issues that we'll see from United going forward and how much of it is unique to this game. And obviously, it's probably going to take us a month or so to figure that out.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you?
I would say like a 5. I felt quite flat after the game.
Yeah.
Because I did feel, not that it was a struggle. Like, I didn't expect this to be a 4-5-0 walkover like some people were predicting because of, you know, all the issues that Wolves have had recently. It was just It wasn't that we had issues. It was that we've had it was issues that we've had last season as well, and that it looked like we were making progress on in preseason. And so I think maybe my expectations were that we would be able to carry that on straight away into the Premier League season. And it's a bit of a worry to me that we weren't. But I will reserve my judgment more fully until we've played, you know, four or five games. And if we see this carrying on, I am interested in how that midfield develops and how we're going to solve that problem. Because Mount does bring a lot in offering, you know, a much more advanced presence, which is good if you're good enough to get the ball into those advanced areas without having that extra midfielder coming deep and being that first receiver.
I guess the difference this season is last season, once Casemiro came into the side, it was plainly obvious there was really only one way for United's midfield to play, and all the other ways were pretty poor. I get there was a slight kind of, you could have a slight alternative with Fred kind of in that number 10 role, but generally it was obvious what United's best midfield was. There are now more options for Ten Hag, and he's going to have to work out whether any of those are better than what it was last season. But yeah, I saw someone saying it was Klopp that said recently the pre-season doesn't really end until the first international break. So yeah, it's experimentation. But as you say, having had a full pre-season and look good, it's a slight disappointment. But I'm probably a 4 on the concern chart, maybe even a 3. I'm pretty confident that Ten Hag will get it right. But the performance has to be much better, Spurs, which we'll speak about after the patron Q&A. We'll also speak about off-pitch issues, Greenwood, Old Trafford, the Glazers. We'll have the Academy round that we'll play, guess a player clue 2 and 3. We'll talk about Maguire's transfer, loads more to get through. But for our patrons, let's dive in and carry the conversation on.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Okay, back from the Patreon Q&A. Interesting question on who would make United's five-a-side team that we're going to come back to again next week as well. If you want to sign up to be a patron, go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod for information about how to do that for as little as a couple of quid a month. Final few things from the first game of the season before we have guess a player, Academy Roundup and a Tottenham preview. It was really nice being back at Old Trafford. As I think I said in the preview, it's such a shame it was on a Monday night because it just doesn't feel like a real start to the season. So on Saturday, I went with a mate to AFC Filed Away with Chesterfield, a Chesterfield supporting mate, just to kind of have that opening. It wasn't their first game of the season, but to have that kind of opening game of the season feel to it. There were a lot of comments from United fans back at Old Trafford about just how tired the ground feels. Like, it was lovely to be back, but I think obviously the weather didn't help. It was pissing it down from all day in Manchester, as it has been for most of summer. It's been a really, really bad July and August in England, but in Manchester as well. But there were a lot of, it did feel pretty tired. I'll read a couple of quotes from the United We Stand forum. Someone said, back in the Stretford End upper last night, and same as ever, another year older with no improvement, same tiny screens, which I think date back to the Sharp sponsorship, the toilet stinking, no chance of a drink at halftime unless you miss 20% of the match you've paid to watch. It's sometimes only after a break that you realise how neglected it has been. And I agree with that. There's work going on behind the scenes, and there was a letter from the Colette Rush, the CEO, to match-going fans pre-match about what's changed. And yeah, the rail seating is great. I love it. Well done to everyone involved on that. The fact the executive area in the Stretford End is going to go next season, brilliant. Well done on that. But it's not enough. Like, Old Trafford does feel tired. The concourses are so bad. The options for food and drink are so bad, if you can even get to the front of the queue in time. And it is just another reminder that it's just the most obvious testament to the incompetence deliberate incompetence of the Glazers. On the other hand, there was another opinion, which I thought was valid from the United We Stand Forum. It said, my Stretford end season ticket cost me £29 a match. If they spend a fortune doing up the ground, prices will go up. I'm quite happy with £29 and holes in the roof, which is a fair thought. How notable were the Glazer out chants and sentiment watching on TV, Jack? Was it mentioned at all? Was the Greenwood protest mentioned at all either?
Not that I saw. I wasn't able to see and watch any of the build-up to the game. So I don't know if it was mentioned in the build-up. Not on commentary. The right. Glazer out chants were, you could hear them as you can in most games at Old Trafford, to be honest, but not really picked up on. I didn't watch the actual coverage, so I don't know if it was brought up more in the build-up or after the game, but not mentioned really on commentary. I mean, the Old Trafford is, it should be the crown jewel of club stadiums in England, you know, and from afar, it still kind of looks like it. With the size of the stadium, you know, outside it's still this magnificent sight, and yet you go in and it really feels like you've stepped back 30 years. And that is the last time. Well, there was a big renovation done in the mid 2000s when the capacity was increased by 9,000 up to 75,000. A lot of that stadium hasn't been touched in far too long. And you go to other stadiums in England or around the world, and you really do start to see just how poor the infrastructure at Old Trafford is.
Yeah, I'm going to be at Spurs on Saturday.
Yeah.
And wow, like, I've been once before, but I will feed back, but I know how it is. It's just such a different experience. And yeah, I think that quote from, I can't remember who it was on the forum, but it's sometimes only after a break that you realise how neglected it has been is so apt. You kind of, as the season goes on, you kind of forget when you're stood in a sweaty concourse, like a really like 40 degree concourse queuing for a pint and everyone's packed in like sardines, and then you get kind of a warm bottle of piss and you just, you kind of get used to it and get accustomed to it. But it's really poor, and it's such a shame. And even from like a financial point of view, United could be making so much more money from match days if they put in that initial investment. But yeah, it was a total of 19 seconds for Glazers out chant to fill the whole ground, which was, I thought was good. New season, no difference. And there was a small pre-match protest about the potential return of Greenwood to the club, which is looking more and more depressingly likely. The statement from, which hadn't come out by the time we recorded before, the statement from the new group, Female Fans Against Greenwood, was so, so good. So good. And yeah, well done to everyone involved in that for taking a stand and writing with such clarity and impact. And it looks like yet another delay, and it's been so poor. I mean, I don't want to dwell on it for too much because it just makes me angry, but it was excellent. We should, and we haven't got much time left, so we need to move on, but we will come back to this. Guess the player clue two, Jack. It's been a while, so I remind you, guess the player clue one was, I have a biblical name. Do you want to make a guess before clue two comes in?
Well, this isn't my official guess. I'll leave that. Well, I won't say yet, actually, for anyone else that's listening, but I have a name in mind, and I'm hoping clue will confirm it.
All right, clue two is, I played with Brian Robson at West Bromwich Albion.
And my idea is out the window.
I have a biblical name, and I played with Brian Robson at West Bromwich Albion before joining United, if you need an extra line. Okay, let's have a quick academy roundup, and then we'll preview the Spurs match and have the final clue of guess the player. The under-21s opened the season with a gutting late 3-2 defeat at Crystal Palace. They were brilliantly intense in the first half. Mark Bright, I was watching on Palace TV because my brother was commentating for them, and Mark Bright, who was commentating alongside him, said, I haven't seen an under-21s team press like this for a long, long time, discussing United's first half. It was so impressive. And I mentioned earlier about it, that the tactics kind of seems like United's first team in pre-season. It looked really good. And United went ahead with a penalty, Matteo Mejia earning it and confidently confirming it. But there was just a final lapse of concentration in added time of the first half. So Rakitić equalised for Palace. And then United's intensity just dropped after that goal. And in the second half, did miss a penalty at the start of the second half to regain that lead. Isak Cantona tripped in the area, but Mark Gerardo's conviction lacking penalty was well saved by the Palace keeper, and Palace soon went in front. They deserved to do so, but it was dramatic. It was a very, very enjoyable game to watch. Noah Imran equalised for United in the 90th minute. Really good from him. He drove in from the right wing, found Gerardo in the box, and then poked home the returning pass. But the drama continued. United lost their concentration again at the end and conceded another late goal, 98th minute. So no opportunity to reply after that, and lots of lessons to be learned. None of Amari Forson, Hannibal Medjbri, Alvaro Fernandez or Dan Gore were involved, which is perhaps a hint at their heightened status at the moment. I think a couple will go out on loan and a couple will stay on the fringes of the first team. The under-18s had no such drama in their game. They dispatched Middlesbrough 4-0 away from home. All four goals coming in the first half. Another very intense first half and very good. Ethan Williams, a standout player who earned the early penalty, which James Nolan scored, and then was involved in all the other goals, including the third, which was such a good finish from him. A really powerful left-footed edge-of-the-area strike. The only other news is Matej Kovar, the 23-year-old Czech goalkeeper, is going to Bayer Leverkusen. He'll do very well there, and United have got an all right fee for him. It's suggested there'll be a buyback clause and a first refusal on that as well, but maybe a sell-on clause could have been better, because I think there's no reason, if he continues to progress, why Kovar won't get quite a sizable fee and a big move in a few years' time. Before the Spurs preview, Jack, guess a player clue three. Let's see if I've thrown you off too much.
I think I've got an answer.
Okay, I'll trust in you to tell me if it stays the same. So I have a biblical name. I played with Brian Robson at West Bromwich Albion. The third and final clue is I was the first black player to score for Manchester United. Have you got a guess?
Yeah, I think that's correct. Is it Remy Moses?
It is indeed Remy Moses. I had the maintenance man at my second year student house was childhood mates with Remy Moses somehow. A fact which I loved. He was called Stan. He was 70, this maintenance man. He never drank tea, coffee or alcohol. Like, he tried them all, but he never drank them properly. He's the fittest 70-year-old I've ever seen. It was unbelievable. The guy was like climbing roofs, doing whatever. And he was so nice. The landlord was an idiot, but Stan was brilliant and would just like fix things for us free of charge. He made us a shoe rack, made us a bench in the garden. He was lovely.
Wow.
And yeah, he knew Remy Moses very well. So I always think very fondly of Remy Moses and our old maintenance man.
After the first clue, the player that was in my head was Angel Di Maria. Playing with Brian Robson at West Brom, that obviously took that out.
Imagine Di Maria at West Brom in 1981. He would get just booted off the park.
Yeah. The other one that, when you mentioned Brian Robson at West Brom, and he didn't play with Brian Robson at West Brom, but he may have played like under Brian Robson at West Brom, was Jonathan Greening. And I know he doesn't have a biblical name, but I was thinking the Jesus like hair.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I just couldn't get that out of my head, even though I knew it wasn't right.
Yeah, yeah. But Remy Moses was a great player as well. We haven't got loads of time to dwell on him, so I won't. But yeah, a great player and a pioneering player as well.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tottenham, we can't play like that again, can we? There's a good kind of teeing up question from Christopher Nusis, one of our patrons, who says, who still has their place in the starting 11 after that poor performance and who doesn't? In short, Garnacho maybe dropped to the bench.
I think Garnacho is the most likely change. Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised.
Who would come in? Sancho?
I think if he was going to be dropped, yeah, it would be Sancho coming in. I to be honest...
Because I fear that we're going to be in an endless cycle of both of them proving they're better off the bench.
Yeah, it did come to mind. And I don't know who tweeted this, but I saw from someone saying, you know, it's no surprise what Garnacho comes on and does at the end of games doesn't work from the start because the game is in a very different state. And I think that's a very fair point. And Garnacho at some point is going to need to learn how to be maybe a little bit more clever in how he approaches, you know, one-on-one battles against fullbacks when the game isn't quite as stretched as it normally is when he comes on in the last 15 minutes. I do think that is a risk. To be honest, I think if it was me, I would actually keep the team unchanged. And it wouldn't surprise me if that is what happens. But I think if there was going to be a change, Garnacho to Sancho would probably be the one that I wouldn't be the most, would be the least surprised.
Did you watch Tottenham's opening game?
I did.
What did you make of them? Because I listened to it. So I have an idea of how they played, but I didn't watch
it. I've got to say, I was impressed, actually. I thought there is clearly a massive sea change from last season under Conte. Very different style of football. The first half, they were very, very open. And I think a player like Garnacho could exploit that massively. There were so many times Brentford were able to quickly break up the field after winning the ball back. And I mean, Spurs were effectively leaving themselves like 2v2 all the time. Second half, they had much more control. They were playing on the front foot much more than in previous years. I think James Maddison is the real sort of kind of creative danger. But I think more so than in previous years against Spurs, probably going to expect United to have less of the ball and play more on the counter-attack. Whereas in previously, you know, Spurs have kind of sat back, let teams come onto them, and they've tried to be the ones counter-attacking. I mean, the obvious issue is where are the goals coming from for them, but Maddison is a, you know, very good creative player. I think for United, the key is just going to be not letting Spurs get on top too much early on, because I think you could definitely see this stadium being very raucous in sort of this a defiant post-Harry Kane world. And if they come out and have a good start, I think it could be tricky for United. But I think the way that Spurs are now playing under Postecoglou is going to open up a lot of chances for United on the counter-attack, which is our
bread and butter. It's funny, we're about to enter the hour mark of the episode. I feel like we started dissecting all these problems and our conclusion at the end of it is, yeah, start the same team again.
Football's a weird sport.
Yeah, it's nice to have
but
it back, isn't
I
it?
I think it's just one of those things where you need to find out if this is a against Wolves problem or if it's a longer term problem. And the only way you do that is by not changing everything massively straight away.
Yeah. It's fairly obvious to say, but getting a win here would be massive because you'd expect United to beat Forest at Old Trafford. Not necessarily, I'm not saying they're going to, but as in United should be beating Forest at Old Trafford. And if you can win away at Spurs and have 9 points from your first three going into a game against Arsenal before the international break, having kind of ridden your luck in the first game as well would be brilliant. But let's see. Are you confident?
I am.
Nice.
I mean, United's away form can't be worse than it was last year. So
I think we'll draw.
It wouldn't surprise me to see another.
Isn't too bad.
Spurs obviously drew at Brentford 2-2. It wouldn't surprise me to see a repeat of that result.
I agree. 2-2 is not a bad shout. United haven't won an away league game in London since before COVID, I think is a stat I saw.
Before the World Cup, I think. We won at Fulham in
that makes a lot of
December.
Sense.
There was a last was thinking game. Did you do the Andy Mitten quiz in the National?
Yeah.
That's where I saw that stat.
I was thinking as I said it, I can't be right. Yeah, it's all right. Since before the World Cup. So it's not so bad.
But yeah, we played at Palace, Arsenal, Spurs. Was there anywhere else we played? Oh, West Ham, all since the World Cup and didn't win a single one.
I was at two of those, yeah. I hope I'm not a curse. Anyway, let's see. It's nice to have football back. And thank you very much for listening, everyone, to the latest episode of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. For more of our thoughts throughout the week, you can find Jack on Twitter at
UTDTaped, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. Thank you for listening. As always, thank you for your support. And if you've enjoyed the show, maybe consider leaving a review because it really helps us out. But other than that, I hope you enjoyed United's return. I hope you enjoy the game on Saturday. I hope you have a great week. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.